Welcome to the ITSB Magazine Podcast Network. You're listening to a new episode of the Perspectives Podcast. Get ready to explore the complexity of life with Dr. Susan and Marco as they offer a space for open and honest dialogue where guests can share unique perspectives on all aspects of life. Join them on this journey to broaden your perspective, deepen your understanding of others, and positively impact society. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
All right, Susan, we're here once again.
I know, I'm so excited. This is going to be great. We have a great guest today, and here we go.
It's going to be a conversation, and it's going to be a conversation about a topic that I think is infinite. I'm just going to start with this. It's an infinite topic, and a lot of people talk about it. It's been around for a long time. It's we kind of go back 2,500 years, I guess, here. And our job today, and our idea and goal is to demonstrate that it's a relevant topic, maybe even more in our modern society. So it's a big task. We'll see if we can do this. And of course, we're not doing this by ourselves. No, we couldn't. Absolutely not. So we do have a guest. His name is Shai Tubali, and he is joining us from somewhere in the world with a beautiful background, very relaxing, very inspiring. And what we'll talk about is it's meditation. It's focused around his experience as an academic and also a practitioner. And there'll be some good tips on our way, the way we live our life. So,
yeah,
Susan, is a full plate here.
I'm really excited because we're going to be going like really deep inside. You know, we've been talking so many things on these episodes about things on the outside. And now we're going to go really deep onto the inside, which is one of my favorite topics. So I'm excited and I welcome Shai. And Shai, welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure being here with you today.
And could you tell us a little bit about you, just the overview of your experience? And then, of course, as you know, Marco and I are going to ask you lots of questions. But we want to maybe give for our listening audience, tell them a little bit about where you're coming from in terms of your experience and your perspective.
Well, I always like to present myself as a researcher of human consciousness. Researcher of the human mind, researcher of human consciousness. Human consciousness is what we can refer to as our self-reflective consciousness. Perhaps we'll use this term in our discussion. And what this entails, because this entails suffering as well as happiness or liberation. So I research these both objectively, as far as as it is possible, as an academic philosopher, because I have studied a philosophy of mysticism, philosophy of religion, both in ancient Greece and in ancient India, and subjectively as a spiritual practitioner and a sort of, well, meditation teacher since 1997. Yes. So my great passion is higher states of consciousness and how we can use them to influence our life. That's the passion in one sentence.
That is great. And I'm curious about, and I'm sure our listeners are, how did you get involved in this? As well as I know a little bit that you describe yourself as having really had a shift in perspective. And given that this show is called Perspectives, I think it's a perfect question to ask. When did you have that shift and how did that come about? And can you tell us about that?
Yes, of course. Well, the shift took place very early in my life when I was just 23. 2 years before that, I had discovered the world of meditation and the world of spiritual seeking and the world of enlightenment, spiritual enlightenment. I remember how at that time I had heard for the first time the concept of becoming one with the universe. And it had been so fascinating without understanding why. So then after 2 years of intense, tireless seeking, really for me, it was a matter of life or death. I visited India. I followed spiritual masters, gurus. And then at the age of 23, it was in the desert, in Sinai, Egypt. I attended a silence retreat, with a certain Israeli teacher. And at a certain point, I finally had a direct insight into what previously I could only, well, imagine or try to grasp intellectually. And that was a moment, a sincere moment. This is how I refer to it, a moment of sincerity, in which I simply looked into myself and realized that the personal self was indeed a complete illusion. So I simply looked into the root of the I, the root of the self, and realized that it was illusory, just as the Buddha, had taught 2,500 years ago. And at that moment, this was my gateway to universal consciousness, the bliss, the unconditional love, the universality of the vision that opened before my mind's eye. They were so overwhelming that I had to remain silent for an entire year afterwards. So that was definitely a change of perspective.
For sure.
Yes.
So as I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, my intent here, it would be to see how this very deep and spiritual experience that you just described. Yes. And to be honest, I mentioned this to you before we started. I'm kind of listening to a course about the history of Buddhism, and I have a feeling that I'm overwhelmed. That's the feeling I have, because it's so complex. But also it comes down to what you said. It's, you know, being one with the universe and a lot of different aspects. And as I mentioned, I feel like, and you wrote a book pretty much about practicality of applying this. Why do I have this feeling that in our modern society, with all the digital experience, with all the interconnectivity and all of that, I feel like people are looking more and more for this spiritual connection. Can you maybe explain us if I am just hallucinating, or if it's something that you share with me?
Well, let's first make an important distinction. Those who are genuine seekers, total seekers, those who are interested in a profound mystical way of life, have always been the rare few. And this is mentioned 2,000 years ago in the Upanishads, in the ancient scriptures of India, and this is also the case right now. There are very rare people interested in going all the way. But if you're asking why it is, or is it, are we imagining that our modern society is increasingly more interested in adopting meditation, adopting spiritual practices, integrating it into its daily life? Yes, that is correct. And I would say that this is because, well, our life, due to technological reasons, has become insanely changing or changeable. It is in constant change. It is in such a constant change that I think that for our mind, although we are following these changes and doing our best to adjust to them, it is still almost impossible to psychologically digest this kind of period. And I think it's just accelerating. So I think that we're looking for what we can call silence, stillness, that which doesn't change, an axis around which everything can revolve. This, I think, makes us psychologically saner.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. There's so much in what you said and what I was just thinking how I as I mentioned to you prior to coming on the show, is that I am in the midst of studying a little bit as Marco's listening. I'm taking a course right now, a year-long study class on Buddhism, and I've meditated, not professionally and not as dedicated. I've incorporated it a little bit, but I do need that stillness that you talk about. But I want to get to something else, because in some of my readings, one of the things that I've been really, that sparked a controversy in my own head, And you kind of alluded to it. It's like not many people go all the way, right? So this idea of can you choose a path that has some of it and incorporate it, yet there are some readings in certain sects of Buddhism that also says being eclectic, there's a downside to that. That, you know, some might say that you lose it by incorporating it into the modern life. You take a little bit from here and a little bit from here. And some might say that it's kind of good, but not really, because you're then losing, you never get the full thing. And so it's kind of an interesting thing. I think there's pros and cons to both. What's your thoughts about that?
That's a wonderful point. I would say that the thing is that we in our modern world, you know, we are appropriating everything. This is what we do. We are extracting essences and ideas and transporting them into completely different cultural environments and so on. So I think that what we have done with meditation and profound mystical ideas and practices is that we have removed them from context. Because to be a real Buddhist, you need to embrace a complete dogma, a complete way of life. You really need to become committed. You have certain vows, certain initiations, and then what we do is that we, for instance, just take mindfulness of breathing, which used to be a tremendous practice. It's a complete path to enlightenment. To the dissolution of the personal self, and then we simply use it to relax, to feel better, to accept ourselves, to feel comfortable within our bodies. So now this is, I think, it has a great advantage because we definitely need that. But if we ask, is this a way to lead a truly committed mystical way of life that can really transform us to the core? This, I would say, probably not.
But I'm going to jump on the different perspective, right? So I don't think it's different. I'm just saying that
yes.
I'm a big fan of, I'm going to use a different metaphor. Exercising and lifestyle, which because meditation is part of that. I prefer to tell people, well, just do it 20 minutes every day. You don't need to become the greatest of all, especially if you are a certain age. Maybe you can't even assume to become a professional sport. But for you, if you have to choose between an hour and a half of heavy training versus squeeze 15, 20 minutes, I welcome that. So you're not going to be rich nirvana, but you're probably going to improve your life. So, and I think that in your book, actually, that's why you give these tips. I think 35 different meditation technique that you can apply in your everyday life. So I think in the end, if we cannot have it all, let's have a little bit, right? Let's improve our life a little bit.
Oh yes, I completely agree, and this you're pointing at the fact that I created a book exactly like that. I'm offering 35 classical meditation techniques, completely removed from their historical or cultural context. Well, I do present the cultural and historical background, but no one should be committed to these dogmas in order to be able to experiment with these meditations. So I think that here there is also a great advantage, because we're finally, since we're non-local, we are global, we can actually become exposed to as many types of meditation practices as possible. We can experiment with many different practices and see also which practices are most suitable for our stage of development, for our interests, for our that they satisfy our curiosity, and that they succeed in triggering or provoking our spiritual self. So yes, I think that this is also a good path, because for those of us who may become enthusiastic and may want to seek further, then that's a very good starting point.
You know, I'm just thinking that if for our listeners, if you're still listening or still watching, then you probably are familiar with meditation to a point. However, I thought maybe, you know, there's a lot of definitions and conceptions around meditation. Mm. Shay, could you define actually, like, let's bring it down to its simplest. What, when you say meditation, what do you mean by meditation?
Okay. I would say, because I've really strived to find one definition, because meditation is so many things. You said before that it's an infinite subject. Well, I would say, generally speaking, meditation is any state that stills the mind, stills the intellect, the heart, the senses, in order to reveal deeper realities of ourselves and life. This would, I would say, a general definition that works in most cases.
And I'm going to add to that with another question, which is the appropriation of many terminology, many terms that come from the many different aspects and path of Buddhism that has been historically there, and how we brought it in our everyday society, sometimes even maybe not even in the right way, you know, you're so Zen today, you know, I'm feeling Zen, I'm chilling, or, you know, but again, I go back to how it's amazing that even if it's not seen from a Buddhist perspective, I feel like there is an appropriation and need of embracing this thing, like mindfulness, all these words that we keep hearing. So maybe a definition of that as well, like mindfulness with meditation. Why is this so good for our everyday life?
A definition of mindfulness?
Yeah. Like Zen and mindfulness, I just picked two that.
Oh, these are very different.
I know. Let's go with both.
well, mindfulness is the broadening of our attention. This is how I would describe it, because usually there are two grossly divided. There are two types of meditation practices. One is all about concentration. Concentration is about focusing our mind on one tiny subject, mantra, or whatever. Even gazing at a candle flame, that is also concentration. And then there is the other type, which is mindfulness. Now, mindfulness is the opposite of focusing. It's broadening our attention, because according to mindfulness, our attention is, well, continuously glued to certain objects, to certain focuses. You see, we have always a certain object of attention, and here in mindfulness we are allowing our attention to become broader and broader, to be able to include more elements of our environment, more elements of the here and now.
Now, that's really interesting, Shay. That brings a different perspective for me on mindfulness. When I talk about mindfulness or think about it in the way that I've spoken to people about it, my understanding, one lens, is that it's the awareness in the present, like that being aware. So it's both. It's like being aware of everything that's happening in the moment. So in some ways, it's both that expansiveness that you're saying, but it's also focusing on the inner in terms of what one is experiencing. So to simplify it, and especially to use it like in the modern world with technology and using it as a practice that you recommend to just kind of to create stillness. For me, the mindfulness is about just being aware both of what's happening inside and being able to pause and say, wait, what is happening with me in that moment? And it could be what's happening physiologically, what's happening thought, what's happening emotion, but also what is happening in the environment or in my body. So it's
exactly
it's kind of, yeah.
Exactly. But please pay attention that I think that we're talking about the same thing, because the thing is that we are usually habitually focused on a certain stream of thoughts. You see, so in that sense, we are overly focused. And if we are expanding our attention to include other components, for instance, our bodily sensations, our breathing, what is happening now, it means that we are actually expanding our awareness to include other elements.
You're right. So, I like that. I really, it's a twist on that, because in the moment, while you're being whatever you're doing in that moment, whether it's you're focusing on something, obsessing about something, or, you know, we know, especially in the United States, and really all over, we talk about the increase in anxiety. And I work with a lot of people on that. And meditation, mindfulness is really a wonderful tool in terms of, as you said, expanding, like looking at what that anxiety is about, and pausing and really being mindful of it. But when you're doing that, you're really realizing you're expanding to that. You're thinking about everything else that's happened or the anticipatory worry. So once you can figure that out, I mean, I could go on. I don't want to keep going on. And Marco, it looks like you have a question, so I want to give you the mic.
No. I'm gonna let Shay jump on this, because I think it's a great bridge to starting maybe to bring it to our everyday life. And the audience may want to be hearing like, okay, so I hear about all of this. It's not just all of nothing. It can be improving many aspects of my life. And I know that this book and what you've been doing really is about this, by using different techniques, given a context historically, but also teaching people to use it to get a gain, immediate gain in their everyday life. So again, I keep using it. We're not going to reach nirvana probably in this life, but if you can release anxiety, if you can stay more focused, if you can apply, and I want you to keep going with this. So what are the advantages of practicing these techniques?
Well, the question is whether we are talking about, I differentiate between purposes and benefits. I think that our medical research and psychological research on meditation usually focuses on benefits. Benefits, this means that we are realizing that it helps us to increase our capacity to cope with pain, or it helps to improve our concentration. It helps us to sleep better. It lowers our blood pressure. Blood pressure and so on. So this is the research, and then there are purposes. Purposes are what meditation is for, what it is designed for, what it wants us to be able to experience internally, and in terms of transformation in our own life. So the question is, what is it that we are talking about, you see?
I'm gonna give you my perspective, and then Susan, and then maybe you answer to both. For me, I understand that humans, especially if they're not very dedicated to something or they're so educated about a topic, in our society, we want everything we want now. So I think that the starting with this is how you're going to see your problem improve, it could be a good reason to get to it. And then, as you say, if you get really into it, then you maybe you bring it to that, you know, more spiritual purpose. At least, Susan, this is my way of.
Yeah, you know, no, I think that's really interesting. I was thinking a little bit different as Shay was talking about the difference. And I loved the distinction between talking about the benefit of it as and distinguishing that from the purpose. And what I went to in my mind is, Shay, as you were talking, was recently, because as I mentioned, I've been meditating on and off for many, many years. I'm not an expert, but I've always been, you know, somewhat have had practices over the years, and now I'm studying more. And as I learn all the different types of meditation, one of the things that I was interesting for me was to realize that as when I go in to meditate at part of my practice is I could think about what is the purpose right now? Like what, and it's both for me. It's what am I doing? Like what do I want to get out of it in a way? And then what's the benefit going to be? So for instance, if I'm finding myself all over the place, I might want to do a meditation that's going to help me to focus. Or if I want, if I'm having a dilemma about something, I may want to go into meditation to kind of just ponder that and to see what comes up on it. So that's what it was interesting because I related it to my practice into both. So Shay, you can respond to any of that or
say something else.
You know.
Okay. Yes, but that's beautiful because you're pointing out that you are using meditation according to specific and changing purposes, right? So, but if we could start from the very beginning, the basic thing that meditation gives us, this is how what I would say. There is something that I call the law of attention. The law of attention is all about learning that the greatest power that exists in the universe is our attention. What does it mean? This means that we are realizing in meditation, perhaps for the first time in our life, that between us, between our awareness or attention and every thought, emotion, or sensation, there is a certain gap. Now, this gap, because the thing is that we automatically become identified with thoughts, emotions, and sensations.
So say that again in terms of that piece, right? I want to hear it, and I think our listeners will want to hear it too. What you said about the gap, that just explain a little bit more about that.
Yes, there is a gap in terms of a separation or differentiation between me who is watching, observing, listening, and that which I listen to. You see, so the thing is that because we have lost this sense of gap, we now think that we are our thoughts, we are our emotions. You see, so now certain thoughts and certain emotions have become monster-like, and we feel that we are held captive by them, that we are powerless to even control them. This is how we have become imprisoned by our own mind. So now, when I meditate, the first learning is that there is a certain gap. There is a distance. There is a split of a second in which I am still not that thought or that emotion, and I have a choice whether to identify with it or not. And this is where my freedom lies. If I discover this gap, I'm actually, perhaps for the first time in my life, free.
Very, very deep. It's kind of like the selfless. Like, don't see yourself as... We don't see ourselves as ourselves, pretty much. We associate with things that happen around us. And so we worry about the past. We worry about the future. And we're not in the present. I mean, I'm trying to just break it down.
And it's so interesting because when you talk about it as a gap, what also comes to mind is like it is a gap. And, you know, when you talked earlier about becoming the one with everything, I've often thought about that one with everything is when, and maybe it is in the gap, but the way I saw it, you know, historically, was when we don't think or feel, like, for instance, when certain people will respond to an emergency without thinking. You see somebody falling, you don't think you automatically move to do that. You become one in that moment, you know, with that thing. You're not thinking. If you see somebody, you know, got to be drowning and you just run in to help that person, you're not thinking. It's an automatic thing. But in some ways that kind of is, I don't know if it's the gap or not, but, you know, again, I can go off in my own head and think about this. But, you know, I just want to say, Shay, the other thing, the word that you used earlier that really resonated with me was what meditation does in terms of settling. You know, the settling of the mind, the emotions, and in a world where there is, and I don't know if we're more unsettled than ever before, or we just, because of technology, we know we are privy to everybody's unsettlement. So I'm not going to say if we really truly are, but what I do know that technology has done, for an example, and maybe you can talk to how a practice of meditation can help with this, right? For instance, you know, Marco talks a lot about technology. So the creation of the cell phone, right? So what this has created in humans is more anxiety, because it used to be that if you didn't hear from someone for a day, you didn't worry, right? You did not have, you weren't saying, oh my goodness, I wonder if that person's okay, your loved one, your family member. Now with cell phones, when we text, and Marco, like you said, we expect everything automatically. And now it feeds into that. You don't get an answer quick enough and people go into literal panic mode. And so how do you see meditation helping with that kind of practical thing in the world today?
Yes, well, first of all, I think I can see because in meditation I begin to understand the way my mind works. I think that's a part of being mindful, right? Because sometimes I think we think that meditation should only make us silent or relaxed, but actually I perceive meditation as a way of understanding the way our mind works. So then if I begin to be able to understand how my anxiety forms and how it is not rooted in reality, how it is a sort of interpretation, and how again I have a choice of whether I want to identify with it or not. You see? So I would say that this is the beginning because suddenly I'm not just becoming the panic,
right?
And I can notice how it is forming without roots in reality. And this is exactly where intelligence begins to come into being.
And I want to add without judgment, because one of the things that we do is we judge ourselves an awful lot, and to become aware, right, of that judgment and kind of just be the observer instead of the judger, right?
Because that's wonderful, yeah. Because you're both aware of the anxiety and the one who judges.
Exactly.
And the judgment, and they are this one movement of thought. Exactly, yes.
And almost like the subjective subjectivity of other people become you instead of being objective and detaching from other. I'm thinking social media and how we have different expectation. I can go in advertising and all of this, but this is not that conversation, although I would love to have it. What I would like to take this last few minutes with you is to look into, actually, because I'm curious, because I've heard many stories about, you know, there's meditation technique. You mentioned looking at a candle, concentrating on your breathing. I heard many tribes, they drumming and repeating a mantra, playing an instrument. It's like, you know, I mean, if I play my guitar, I'm probably kind of meditating, although it may not be technically meditation. So a little introduction for our audience to what are these 35 different, of course, you don't have the time to explain them all, but can you give a little bit of two that are completely different one from another and why they both remain in the realm of meditation, even if they are so maybe different than picturing the statue of the Buddha sitting at the lotus, you know, and breathing, because that's what most people think about.
Yes. Well, I've in the book, I've divided the world of meditation into seven groups of purposes. So perhaps I would choose one from a particular group and another from a completely different, strikingly different group. So I would start with the group that is all about enkindling our joy of life. This is the group that is all about revealing and experiencing our inner joy, our unconditional joy. And here there is, for instance, a series of meditations coming from the 20th century, developed by the spiritual teacher Osho, that is all about dynamic meditations. And dynamic meditations, I think, is a very interesting set of meditations, because it shows us how we can cathartically bring ourselves to a state of effortless meditation. So if, for instance, we're dancing or even crying or laughing cathartically at the edge of our laughter, at the edge of our tears, we find silence. So this is one example. We bring the conditioning of our body, the conditioning of our mind to the edge, and that brings us to the other side of silence. So this is one, and this is how it leads us to silence. In a completely different practice is the Tonglen meditation in Buddhism. Tonglen is, I think, one of the most radical and even frightening meditation techniques that has ever been developed. And this is all about learning the capacity of our heart to include the suffering of the world. So in Tonglen, we actually begin to focus on the suffering of others, including suffering of those we don't like so much. And we begin to breathe into our heart their suffering and to transform their suffering into light and happiness.
I can tell you that as an empath, I studied that a little bit, and it was very difficult for me to embrace that, because it was the thought of bringing in the suffering of others. It takes a real deep understanding, and I'm not sure I haven't quite gotten that yet, but I understand the idea of it. But it is very difficult to do in terms of taking that in and transforming it out, because I've watched a lot of people have that reaction to, you know, what I feel it too much. So Shay, I did not unfortunately have the opportunity to read the book before this discussion, but I am so excited to read it. I'm really looking forward, and maybe we can even have you back again, because there's so much in there that I think could be really useful to our listeners.
Well,
just for a final question.
Yes.
You know, because I know that meditation, the practice, right? Practicing meditation and having a regular practice has its benefits. So it's not just that you do it one time and then you're getting that impact that day. Could you talk just a little bit to the benefits for folks of the continuous practice that may not seem direct in that day, but what the benefits are?
Yes, of course. Well, I would say that the continuity or the daily basis of the practice should not be taken too rigidly, Because if we, I believe that if we begin to practice the very same practice every day, we begin to get used to it, or to transform it into one into another chore, another duty, another discipline, something that we add to our daily activities. Thus, meditation becomes another activity. Now, since meditation is all about the art of non-doing, I would say that this is the wrong way. That is why I think, on the one hand, we do need to understand that meditation is revealed only when we take it very seriously. That is, only when we delve deeply into it with sincerity and with a certain heart commitment. On the other hand, it's perfectly fine to change your meditation practice from time to time, and to challenge yourself by experimenting with new types of practices, and also sometimes to disturb the daily routine and to remind ourselves that meditation is not a duty.
Well, that's a very interesting and that's a very interesting and different perspective. And perhaps that, you know, I'm thinking about my learnings right now, where we actually take a voluntarily, of course, but you can take a weekly vow to meditate and practice whatever you want to come up with X number of times per week. But perhaps it's both. Perhaps it's for new people starting out to make that commitment. And then once you're in practice and you have that, you change it up so that it doesn't become stale or just another to do. And you're so right in that, because that, especially in the modern day, it becomes one more have to as opposed to want to. This has been great. Exactly. Marco, what do you think? Exactly. Like, it's been great.
No, I'm with you, because I've always been interested. I've never really been practicing as much as I would have liked to. And then one day again, I just, you know, maybe it's the age too, and I'm in that place where I have decided I want to learn more about all of this. And of course, you know, I like to learn things from an historical, cultural, sociological thing. But then I'm like, okay, enough with the theory. Let's see if it really works for me, right? So I like this idea of experimenting with different techniques, and I like the fact that you're not so rigid into say, in order to get the results, you need to do it every day at the same hour. You know, it's kind of like, make it fun. And then maybe you will get more and more into that. So, I'm curious, because I was reading the summary and I'm like, yeah, I've heard of some of this technique and I'm really looking into learn more about it from an historical, sociological perspective as well. So,
yeah. And, you know, when you were talking about the Tonglin, I was also thinking, and again, I apologize, I was not able to read the book yet, but I'm going to. Like a variation of that is the general loving kindness meditation. And I feel like of right now, again, I don't know if it's so different than before, but we just know about it. But I think that a loving kindness meditation can benefit everyone. Just because, you know, it's loving kindness for everyone. And as you said before with the Tonglin, you also do it to, quote, your enemies. And when we do loving kindness meditations, we're also sending loving kindness to people who maybe we're not that loving towards. But exactly. I think the world can always use more loving kindness.
Yes.
I think so, too. Shay, leave you 1 minute, 2 minutes, make a call for something that you want to share with our audience. You know, it can be about the book, it can be an advice, whatever you like. And then after that, we'll just say goodbye.
I would just quote the Buddha. The Buddha said something remarkable. He said that there is nothing in this world that is a greater source of suffering than an uncultivated mind. And there is nothing in this world that is a greater source of happiness than a cultivated mind. And I think this says it all. This is what meditation is all about, cultivation of our mind in order to make it a source of happiness and a source of liberation rather than a source of, well, self-induced suffering.
Well, we're going to have you back just to talk about the meaning of cultivation. So we're not going to have time to do that today. But I think that was a great quote from the Buddha to end on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you, Marco.
And yeah, thank you.
To our listeners.
Exactly.
You know, and our viewers, thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you for being tuned this far. If you haven't, there is a podcast, the audio version. So tell your friends, tell your family. I think there is something for everyone to take advantage of. Maybe, you know, try something new if you never tried it, or go back into an habit that maybe, you know, like me, have been postponing and doing. Stay tuned with Perspectives. We will be back with another episode a couple of weeks after this one. So we hope you got something from this. And Shay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a great joy being with you. Really great joy. What a wonderful conversation.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Perspectives Podcast with Dr. Susan and Marco, part of the ITSB Magazine Podcast Network. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then add this show to your favorite podcast player, subscribe to the ITSB Magazine YouTube channel, and share the ITSB Magazine Podcast Network with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to connect your brand to our conversations and our audience, visit itsbmagazine.com to learn how to sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey.